Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the gyps in the PC. It is Saturday, the Ides of August, Anno Domini 2020, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, not going to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues, here comes the news. All right, Microsoft on Tuesday patched 120 vulnerabilities. Two that are notable because they're under attack, and a third because it fixes a previous patch for a security flaw that allowed attackers to gain a backdoor that persisted even after a machine was updated. Oh, yeah.
Isn't that nice?
I just, this is a live stream. Okay, we're on. The first zero day is present in all supported versions of Windows, all supported versions, which means all versions, but they don't care about the unsupported versions anymore, including Windows 10 and Server 2019. CVE 2020-1464 is what Microsoft is calling a Windows Authentic Code Signature Spoofing Vulnerability. Hackers who exploit it can sneak their malware onto targeted systems by bypassing a malware defense that uses digital signatures to verify that the software is trustworthy. Authentic Code is Microsoft's in-house code signing technology for ensuring that an app or driver comes from a known and trusted source and hasn't been tampered with by anyone else. Because they modify the OS kernel, drivers can be installed on Windows 10 and Server 2019 only when they bear one of these cryptographic signatures. On earlier versions of Windows, digital signatures still play an important role in helping AV and other protections, antivirus and other protections, to detect malicious wares. The host of Windows versions affected suggests that the vulnerability has existed for years, I would say decades. Microsoft provided no details about the cause of the vulnerability, how it's exploited or by whom, or who the targets are. The other zero-day under attack can install malware on an attacker's choice when targets view malicious content with Internet Explorer, an ancient browser with an outdated code base that's vulnerable to all kinds of exploits, sadly, i.e. is embedded in every version of Windows, including 10, and you can't uninstall it. One way attackers can exploit the flaws by planting booby-trapped code on a website the target visits. Another method is to embed a malicious ActiveX control in an application or Microsoft Office document that uses the IE rendering engine, that is, all of them. Despite being harmful, Windows will show that the ActiveX control is safe for initialization. The third fix released on Tuesday is CVE 2020-1337. Yes, LEET. It's a patch for CVE 2020-1048, an update that Microsoft released in May. It's a patch on a patch.
And it's the 13,000th patch this year.
So far.
Yeah, so far. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes, that's 13,000 with a comma. The May patch was supposed to fix a privilege escalation vulnerability in the Windows print spooler. The flaw made it possible for an attacker with the ability to execute low-privilege code to establish a backdoor on vulnerable computers. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Patch Tuesday Highlights. Your choices are great. So, same old, same old. Typical, which I think is kind of the same thing now that I look at it. Can't wait for the patch to the patch to the patch. Windows and others. So far, we have 94 votes. I'm delighted to say the poll has not gotten quite as many votes over the last few weeks as it used to. And I'm glad to see we're up higher now. Can't wait for the patch to the patch to the patch is number one, followed by Windows. Number two. Of course, if you said other, you can leave a a comment in the forums. And now, where are the forums? Well, that's easy enough. Just go to our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 15-Aug-20, Patch Tuesday Highlights. And, of course, if you have something else you'd like to say about that or dang near any other subject, please feel free to give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Or text us on our brand spanking new super shiny text line, 585-205-8887. However, if you are going to send us a text, don't be brief.
Yeah, give us
a little. Don't know what your computer is. We don't know what operating system you run. We don't know anything about you or your setup. So if you just call us and if you just text us a message saying, I can't load Word, what's wrong?
Yeah.
We can't help you.
Give us a little background.
Give us a little background. Give us enough information to do some troubleshooting.
And the other thing that I would definitely recommend to folks, it's only 12 minutes after 12 right now.
Yeah.
We are on until 2 o'clock.
Yep.
That gives you a little less than an hour and 50 minutes. Fair warning, do not call at 10 minutes to 2 and get upset because I can't put you on.
Right.
Because we're running out of time.
Right. So, yeah, there's 120 patches, 13,000 for the year so far. 13,000 patches. And that's just the operating system. That's not any of your software.
Let's see. How many did my Chrome get?
Yeah, exactly. You get updates. You get a few updates a month. So there's some updates, but there's no comma in that number.
Yeah. And, oh, you know what? So far... And how many years have I had my Chromebook? And I think you can attest to the same thing. They all work. They haven't bricked my machine in all the years that I've had it. I still haven't gotten spyware. It was interesting that time that the your machine tried to get it,
yeah,
and it didn't let it in. That was fun to watch.
That was fun, actually, yeah.
So, you know, yeah, no.
Yeah, no is exactly the correct answer. Yeah, no. But the interesting thing is, for me, it doesn't much matter anymore. Oh, Steve's having an earthquake. It doesn't much matter for me anymore. But you must have moved your screen or something.
Ken, where are you calling from?
Okay, hold on. At any rate, yeah, exactly. What was I going to say? Oh, 0 days. The thing that used to really bother me as a system administrator, and remember, we're all system administrators now.
Yep.
But the thing that used to bother me as a systems administrator was 0 days. Because a zero-day flaw means it's actually actively being exploited out in the wild before there's a patch out for it.
Mm-hmm.
You have 0 days to protect your system against it. So that's a real issue that a lot of people don't really understand correctly. 0 days, and there were two in this one, in every version of Windows and every version of Windows Server, every single version.
And if you're running a version that doesn't get any updates, that patch will never get fixed.
You're mm-hmm. done.
Yep, you're toast.
You are done.
Say goodnight, Irene.
Good night, Irene. Thanks for asking. But anyway, let's head to the phones, or not. Hold on. My computer is confused, mildly confused. There we go. Our first caller is Ken from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Ken. What's up?
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Peachy. How are you?
Well, I'm not doing peachy, but I'm bubbly.
Bubbly. That's not bad. What's up?
Lovely. Steve called in last week with a question about backward compatibility with his 32-bit application.
Right.
Well, I had some fun this week because I didn't know the answer either and learned a few things. And I went for the gold. I installed a program called Micrograph Designer, with system requirements of an 8386 IBM compatible PC, 4 mega RAM, 10 megabyte minimum hard disk, Windows 3.1 or higher, DOS 3.1 or higher, mouse or digital pad, VGA, or other video card supported by Windows 3.1.
First released in 1986.
Wow.
There you go. Well, you know, I'm old, and what can I say? So I had success. I had it running on, you know, old systems, but I had it recently, for a long time, running on XP. And I decided to try it on 8. And it installed beautifully, except for one caveat. In the old days, when it said it rebooted, it did. In this case, it did the it brings you back to where you log off, and then you got to click to log yourself back in.
Yeah,
and then it installed fine. I figured out how to see what's in it under 8. It's really a simple process. You press the keyboard shortcut, Control-Shift-Escape, opens the taskbar. Click the Details tab, right-click the column title row, and check on Select Columns.
Sure.
And then check the box next to the platform and click OK. And then that platform column shows up, and behold, there's how many bits it is. All the software on this 8 machine is all 32.
Sure, sure. Yes.
And my goody software is 16 bits.
Oh.
Yep.
And the last one I wanted to tell you about was a thing I always questioned, and you answered it for me last week. If you go under processes, it does this cute cycling. I've often wondered about that. And that's exactly what you were saying, Nick. It's cycling because it's got some type of an interpreter to run that old software.
Right.
And then when you click on, you know, processes and sort it, you can actually bring up not only the name of the application, but the where it's located. So when I unload that software, in other words, I close it, I have to manually close that thing, or it just keeps cycling, and it doesn't shut off.
Right, because it's not written for that particular operating system.
Yeah.
What you're describing is what is technically known as a state change. The state of an Intel processor must absolutely change from a 64-bit system to a 32-bit system. And that means it takes all of the stuff it does in 64-bit, all of the bits in memory, all of the bits in the cache, all of the bits in the registers, everything, saves it out to a special area of memory, and then swaps in all the same stuff in 32 bits. And when you do that once, it's not a big deal. But remember, Windows is a multitasking operating system. So it does that hundreds of thousands of times a second. So yeah, if you are running a combination of 64 and 32-bit software, it slows down your machine horribly.
Yep. Now, for specifically Micrograph Designer, it was purchased by CorelDRAW, and it's part of the CorelDRAW technical suite, which is fully Windows 10 64-bit compatible. So you can upgrade to a newer version of that software that works on modern OS with modern processors.
Right.
Yeah, that's good news. I guess if I ever decide to go that route, I'm satisfied with what I got. In the meantime, I checked my XP, and I checked 7, which I have on another machine. And those going into the task manager, there isn't an option when you bring up the menu. You have to bring it up a little differently for platform.
Right.
So, sadly, you know, you can't tell how many bits application you got going there.
Well, back when Windows 7 was written, everything was 32-bit anyway.
Yeah, back then.
Well, I guess, you know what, I don't know if I were...
Isn't that 16?
You know, if I were Steve, I'd say...
No, it was 32, then you could go to 64.
He could give 8, 7 an opportunity to run it and see what happens. I mean,
You can run something like a VirtualBox or one of those things and create a virtual system to run them, I suppose. But if it's the guy I think you were talking about, what he was talking about was the fact that Microsoft is abandoning 32-bit software. So if you've got an older machine that only runs 32-bit software,
any
you will not be able
stuff.
To run any of the new stuff.
Yep.
And in addition, he was worried about Thunderbird. And because when you go to download Thunderbird, the first option that comes up is the 32-bit version. But you can find the 64-bit version on the site and install that and make that problem go away. And I checked my machine, of course, which is Linux, and everything is 64-bit. So the 64-bit, all my software, which is one of the reasons, not the only, but certainly one of the reasons that Linux runs so very much faster than Windows, is because all of the software, both in the parts of the Windows operating system, are still the original Windows XP 32-bit software.
There might even be some NT code back in there.
There is certainly NT.
Probably, yeah.
Look at the name of the
new technology.
Yeah.
It's the NT kernel.
Yep.
Yep.
And so Linux, on the other hand, is fully 64-bit from the ground up. So it is much, much, much faster.
Well, I just thought I'd give him an opportunity, and I just wanted to see for myself.
Yep. Yeah,
I do have one quick question.
Sure.
And Dave always says, so Dave, I'm taking you on your word now.
Go for it.
There's no such thing as a stupid question.
You got that right. I've said it for decades, and I stand by it.
Well, as you can tell, I've been around a while, so I've seen, a few times around the mulberry bush. You know, one of the things I've tried to do over the years, and I haven't been able to do it with the wild cards or anything else, is to simply find files with no extension. And I primarily use XP, but I go into other systems every now and then. And I've often wondered, how do you do a search, say in XP, to find files without, the .exe or whatever? In other words, it's vacant, the extension.
Can't you just do a simple, say you're just going to do look for car. Do C-A-R and then a star. So if there's anything, car, Ford, car. And it would just look for that file name. No, if you don't put the dot, then a wild card, you just put a name. It goes through your whole list just looking for that one phrase because... it could be in the beginning of a file name or at the end, and it'll just do it that way.
Well, I'm. That's a great idea. I'm not explicitly looking for a name that I know. I'm more trying to capture the names that I named some things to in the past without an extension.
Right. You just want to find all the files without an extension.
Yeah.
There is there
crap.
In Windows 7. I do not believe you can do it.
Yeah, no.
In 10, there is PowerShell. Like in Linux, there's the command line, and there are things you can use, awk and sed and stuff like that, to search all your files and find the ones without extension. But I don't believe that straight out of the box, there's a way to do that in Windows 7.
Okay. Well, then I don't feel so bad.
There's no not Boolean operator because you could say not.exe.
Right. Yeah. That's why you need something like awk or sed or any of those
qualifiers
qualify it. But right out of the box from the command line, I believe that Windows 7 is so primitive, there's nothing that'll do that.
Okay. Well, listen, I appreciate all your help and. I had fun, and you guys, as I've said before, you guys keep picking your peaches.
Thanks, Ken.
Bumbly.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, well, we got a couple texts that came in. And this one, first one is from Will in Hampton, Virginia. Hey, fellas, I have a Toshiba C55D-B5308. Which originally had Windows 8.1. I want to replace the hard drive which crashed. My intent is to replace it with a 250 gig SSD. My question is as follows. Is there any proprietary about the SSD, the manufacturer, the pins, the connectors, etc.? Thanks. From Will from Hampton, Virginia.
Theoretically, no.
No.
I guess it depends on the SSD, but 99.9, every one I've ever seen.
Yeah,
100% of the ones I've seen. You just have to have the correct connector.
Yeah, and it looks like on the spec sheet, it's a standard serial ATA connection.
Right. So as long as you have a SATA SATA SSD, it should replace pretty easily. I have a laptop that I did almost the exact same thing too. It isn't a Toshiba, but basically it's an Asus, and they make half of Toshiba's interns anyway. But
iFixit has a teardown guide on how to replace the hard drive.
There you go. So Steve will post a link to that, so you can see how what screws you have to undo and all of that. It's the hardest thing is getting all the screws undone and all the screws redone.
And it's clips. It's plastic clips holding the case together. So you're going to mar the case trying to wedge the clips open.
But the idea here is that once you put that in, you do have to have an operating system to install on it. So if you've got a CD drive or a thumb drive that you can boot from to install that whatever operating system you want, that's how you do it.
All right. Surprisingly, it looks like the Toshiba computer has a Toshiba hard drive in it.
Unbelievable.
Son of a gun.
That would be something if they use someone else's hard drive.
Yeah, right.
All right, we got one more before we go to the break, and this is from Steve. This is Steve with the 32-bit question from last week. I fixed my problem by having my local computer guy set me up with a 32-bit refurbished Windows 10 machine. I used Agent Ransack to do a search for the file with no extensions. Use star dot nothing after the star dot.
Right, but I don't think that works in Windows 7.
Yeah.
In Windows 10, there's all kinds of ways to do it, just like there are in Linux and then from the Mac command line. But in Windows 7, I do not. It might. It certainly can't hurt to try.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Can't hurt to try, but I don't know that that'll work.
I don't think there's anything that'll stop. Well, worst it'll do is not find anything for
it. Right.
And I mean, it's not like it's going to break the machine or anything like that. So he's good there.
Right. So yeah, there's at least you can give it a try. There are also programs you can download that will search the hard drive for things. So you might want to look into some of those. But that's the deal right there.
And that's frequently what you need to do to keep an old software running. You keep the old computer running.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. I don't.
Well, it depends on how important that software is. If it's something vital that you actually run an old machine, I just wouldn't have it hooked up to an internet connection.
That micrographics the guy was earlier caller was talking about. Yeah, Corel sells it. It's $1,000.
Right.
So that's a big incentive to not get the new version.
Or to find an alternative.
To find an alternative, yeah.
There's a site called alternative2.net where you can put in pretty much any program, and it'll give you alternatives that are either free or cheap on a variety of operating systems. So, I do everything I do is satisfied by the GIMP, the GNU Image Manipulation Program. But if you have specialized needs or you're just so used to running that one program for the last 40 years, I get it. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. Text us at 585-205-8887, and we'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites.
That's going to get us a takedown notice.
You're right, it is.
You left the music on too long.
Well, yeah. It's all Rob's fault. He puts it in there, so right. It's good music, and I got
to
play
There's no way for me to tell YouTube we're allowed to stream music. We have a license.
Right. So I accept that you have to tell them every time.
Every single time, yeah.
Before we get back to the phones, we have a follow-up from Will from Hampton, Virginia. How can I tell if I have IDE versus SATA? It's in your specification sheet. If you don't have your specification sheet, for any machine, the easiest thing to do is to go to Google and put in all your specs. So, for example, I just said Toshiba C55D B5308 specs. And it actually pointed me to Toshiba's own spec sheet, which tells me that in that particular case, it does in fact have a 500 gig, 5400 RPM serial ATE hard disk drive. So it is SATA.
Yeah, and we were talking that the SATA specification first came out in 2000. Right. So if your computer is less than 20 years old, it
probably
has IDE. Less than 20 years old has SATA. More than 20 years, there was IDE, then there was MFM and
RLL.
Before that,
Well, on Toshiba, though, it's very simple. Also, you just got to flip it over, and there's usually a weird shape.
And most of them, there's a door. Yeah.
Door that you can pop it open and look and see what type of connector you have, whether it's IDE or SATA.
Then you have to know what the connectors look like.
Which you can also find out.
Yeah. What always struck me is that IDE was parallel, you know, with 8 bits in a row or 32 bits in a row, and SATA is serial. How can serial, one after the other, be faster than sending 32 at the same time?
It took me a very long time to understand that, and it's math.
Yeah.
Yeah. Figures.
It's all math. Just let it be.
So
take it on faith.
If we take SATA where they're going that fast and then make 8 data lines or 32 data lines, then it should be even.
Yeah, but believe me, there's more to it. There's way more to it than that. Anyway, back to the phones. Our next caller is Matt from Webster, New York. Hi, Matt. What's up?
Hey, good afternoon, fellas. Let me just give you a brief breakdown because you say you guys need details. Had a good come up on eBay. I got an Acer Aspire used laptop. And I want to take it. It's got a 320 gigabyte hard drive in it, and I'm trying an Windows 10, 8 gigabyte, you know, things like that. What I want to take that hard drive out of there and put in a new hard drive. Two questions. I'm thinking about going with a Samsung or a Crucial hard drive. They're both SSD, 250 gigabytes. Is there any difference? And also, how would I turn that and put that? I've heard of Chromium. How would I make it basically? It's really nice. It's like a 17-inch laptop mint setup. How would I make that into a Chromebook once I put the new SSD in it?
Okay, a couple of things. First, difference between most SSDs, they're all pretty much the same. Samsung and Crucial are both very well-known names.
And Crucial is owned by Micron, and Samsung and Micron are the two biggest vendors of NAND chips.
Right, so you really can't go wrong with either one. Really, at that point, take a look at the warranty. If the warranty is the same, they're pretty much the same. If one warranty is better, get that one. In terms of turning it into a Chromebook, the easiest way to do that is with a product called Neverware.
Okay.
Neverware. Yeah, Neverware. That's the company name is Neverware. The product that they sell, giveaway actually, is called Cloud Ready. And it will take any laptop or any computer and essentially turn it into a Chromebook.
And they have done all the installation and configuring and set up things for you. You can install the Chromium OS yourself and then do all that manually.
Right. You can do that. So if you really...
Well, here's the deal, too. Can I mention something? I tried to run it off on the fly off a USB stick, and it kind of got, like, stuck or had an error on it. So I just want to make sure what I'm doing when I get this new hard drive. Well, this is with my old hard drive, but when I get the new hard drive, I just want to make sure everything goes 100% smoothly. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And one of the things that you can do is before you install any operating system, check with their support centers to see what operating systems are certified. So in Neverware, you can look at all of the companies, the various Acer models, and the are in there. The Acer Aspire. There are multiple models of Acer Aspire, and there's probably a dozen, well, half a dozen anyway, that are certified 100% for cloud ready. So I would check those first. So if you go to neverware.com and check on I just screwed that up completely. All right. okay, hold on. Neverware.
You're in trouble today.
I am. I just can't.
Was it too much coffee or not enough?
yeah, right, exactly. What the problem is, this is a touchscreen.
Mm.
And for some reason today, I keep hitting it with a knuckle when I go to hit one of the function keys, and it goes somewhere. I don't know what my story is today. Apparently, I've got my
You're
pinky
out of control.
I've got my pinky out because of my...
Basically, though, Nick, I want to say, though, when you go from, like, because I have the 320 old hard drive in here, when you go from a solid state, you know, what's the major difference you notice, like, performance-wise?
Speed. It's way like how much, faster.
Like how much? 50, 25? What are we talking here?
Look, depends on the motherboard.
It depends on 100 different things, but it's going to be, for example, my old Acer laptop went from, went from about a 2-minute boot up to Windows 10 to an 8-second boot up to Linux.
That sounds like a Chromebook.
Yeah.
My girlfriend's Chromebook.
And,
well, that's exactly right. It's Linux and it's super fast. Yeah.
In generic raw numbers, we see HDs, especially if you're on a fast system bus, that could be another problem. That could be a slower system bus. About 100 megs a second. With SSDs, you can easily get 500 megs a second. I've seen some of them push 1,000 megs a second.
Right. It also depends on how much RAM you have and, like you said, the bus speed.
Well, but it's certainly going to be much faster. Files or big files.
Right.
So definitely SSD is the way to go.
Absolutely.
And, worth the upgrade. All right.
Well, now that's
really what's... Peace of mind. Peace of mind when you say that. Now, what are the two things you need to know again? Neverware, and you had mentioned something else. One other thing, I think.
Yes. If you go to the Neverware site at neverware.com, in the menus across the top, there are... No, I don't want to be there. I want to be under support. Under support, one of the choices is installing Cloud Ready.
Okay.
And under that, when you get to that page, down on the left are the certified models.
Gotcha.
So go check your certified models and make sure that the version, that the Aspire you have, because more than just Aspire, right? It could be the E3111. It could be the Aspire 15320H. I mean, it could be any, you know.
Yeah, I got the 77360-4088.
Yeah, go check.
Yep. All right, I appreciate your guys' help. And as always, I found I was tuning into Jazz on Sunday last week. A great show on Jazz Radio, actually, American Standards.
Oh, yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
Excellent.
So I'm going to be tuning into Jazz 91 tomorrow and...
Listen to it again.
Listening to some great music, man. So thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate your help.
Thank you. Another unsolicited testimonial, ladies and gentlemen. Everybody should be listening to this station. Everybody should be donating to the station. Thank you very much. Thanks, Matt. Bye-bye. Yeah, we've got a real simple upgrade to any machine. There are two things that make it, that will generally make your machine much faster. More RAM, SSD. Those two things will, with most, not certainly that 20-year-old Windows 7 machine, but with
anything within the past 5 years.
Right.
It should be, you know, that's within 5 years, you're going to see some change. But as we've said before, on the older machines, all you're doing with, you know, people put in different stuff, and they're disappointed because all of a sudden, well, it's not as fast as I thought. Well, you know what? You've put this piece in that maybe is a little bit faster, but there's other pieces to the puzzle that can affect it. Hey, boss.
How did I know that was going to happen? How did I know?
We always put it there.
We got you there.
You're right there in the middle, buddy boy. Where? Oh, no, now it's Paul Lynn.
No,
he's right
Rob's
above it.
Looking down on Paul.
He's got his own little square under Paul.
That's a horrible picture of me.
Yes, it is. Thank ladies you. And gentlemen,
that was the one
Rob Linton in the house.
One I found on one of your postings.
Oh, gosh. Blame yourself.
Send me a better one.
All right, you have recently taken a couple of pictures where you didn't look horrible. You should post more of those.
I'll work on that.
He looks like a deer in headlights.
Thank you.
Better than the drug picture he had.
Yeah.
That's about 2 minutes of my self-esteem I'm never getting back.
Can't unsee that.
All right. We should probably go back to the phones.
Well, we can still see him there in the delay. There he goes.
Oh, yeah, there he is. He was there.
Behind me, yeah. Yeah. No, Rob Linton.
Behind Dave there. Very nice. Very nice. All right, back to the back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Hi, guys. I've been using LastPass for years. And for the last year or two, I've been using it on my Acer Chromebook R13.
Yeah.
And everything's been just hunky-dory. And a couple weeks ago, it didn't recognize my password.
Yep.
And I know what my password is, and it just would not accept it. And then I monkeyed around, tried to do this, that, and the other. Nothing worked. A couple days later, all of a sudden, it starts working again.
Yep.
And then a few days or a week later, same thing all over again. That really sounds weird to me. I can't understand what's going on.
It's not you, it's them. LastPass has been having some issues. See, when you log into LastPass, one of the things it does is it goes up to their website to verify. And they've had some website issues over the last couple of weeks. And not everybody got caught because it was intermittent. And, of course, intermittent problems are the toughest ones to find and fix.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, so it took them a while to get there, and looks like they're not entirely there yet. But, yeah, they've been having a few issues, and it just sounds like you got caught. I'm sorry.
Hmm. Is there a workaround for that kind of a situation?
Not really.
Yeah, there is. Wait.
Well, yes, you can wait or you can change your product. But if you're going to continue to use LastPass, which is a fine product, I'm not saying don't. But if you're going to continue to use LastPass, all you can do is wait for them to fix the problem. Sorry.
Yeah.
It also might not be them. It also might be your internet connection to them.
Hmm.
Right. So that can be an issue as well.
I can't control that much either.
So. No, you can't. Nope. I'm sorry. No.
You're back to, like I said, wait.
Wait is pretty much all you can do. I'm sorry.
Boy, that's if you're trying to do something like pay your bills or something, that gets pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes, and that's why there are movements afoot, I guess is the proper term, to say that internet connectivity is no longer a luxury but a necessity in America. Obviously, that's being fought because that has major. Legal implications, but I think we're seeing more and more that it's hard to do anything without a good internet connectivity.
Yeah, and with all the
anything in society,
home things and whatnot going on today, it's just getting more and more.
Right. I mean, I can sit for hours and read a book or play the banjo if I still had
good fingers.
But in terms of pretty much day-to-day work, most people do at least some part of their job on the internet. So, for example, one of the things we're here, if we were not doing computer stuff, we would be sitting here playing records, right? Or, tapes, songs.
We got records, MP3s, too.
Right.
Still
but we'd be playing music, and that doesn't really require internet connectivity, except that one of the things we have to do is fill out a health check before we're allowed in the building. And that's online.
Well, the one thing this station does do is when the DJs are playing their, say, their time slot, What they're doing is recording all the songs in it that they wrote, played, and then that is uploaded now as a service to our listeners that they can go and look at the log. And if they sit there and say, well, wait a minute, I just heard that song a little bit an hour ago. They can look at the list of all the tunes that have been played. I forget how many days back far you can go and actually see all the tunes that each DJ played.
And also they tweet it. So if you if you follow Jazz 90.1 on the Tweeties there, you can see what song is playing right now. Yep. But again, that's secondary. What this station does at heart is play music over the radio. Don't need the internet for any of that.
Right.
But in order to get into the building, you better have the internet. And even with students, as you said, Larry, you have students nowadays who are doing everything distance learning. If they don't have internet, they can't learn. That's way more a necessity than it is a luxury.
I'll say.
Yeah. At any rate, that's the deal. And there's nothing much you can do about what's happening with LastPass. The theory is they're at the very least on it if they haven't fixed it already.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks very much.
Also, take a look at, I don't know if you're, on the border of switching to something else. Nick turned me on to NPass, and I have been using that, and I love it.
ENPASS.
It is a great free product. And you can sit there and you have full control. I don't know about the other LastPass. Is how complicated the passwords you want or as simple as you want.
There's nothing I hate more than I like 64 character passwords.
I love
That's
them.
What I like. And there's nothing more frustrating than you put in a 64 character password and says maximum of 20 characters.
Yeah, my bank did that.
Well, where are you?
22 characters. I said, all right, well, then I'm going for 22. And we're throwing in punctuation and upper and lowercase.
Right.
I'll throw it at them big time and guaranteed nobody's getting into it. So
it's worse is when they don't tell you ahead of time how many characters. Yep. They don't tell you there are certain characters you can't use. So you put in a password and it says too long. Put in another password and says can't use quotation marks.
Yep.
Put in another password, can't use commas. Well, you know what? Now I don't even want to go here anymore.
Must have a special symbol.
So take a look at that too, Larry. I mean, it's something you can just browse and think about.
Yeah. At any rate, the basic idea with LastPass is there's nothing you can really do about it. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. At least you confirmed my suspicion.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Have a good one.
You too.
I'm looking on their website for status, and it doesn't say there's any status problems with LastPass.
The last one
was a Chrome extension that they fixed.
Yeah. Well, that might be what he's using.
Could be.
Yeah.
So you may have to re-download that Chrome extension.
Or just update his extensions.
Yeah.
That's possible, too. But, yeah, it's those of you who are not using a password manager, shame on you. And that's putting it politely. You should be keeping track of all of your passwords in a secure vault. And one of the most secure ways to do that is with a password manager like LastPass or NPass. They will keep track of all of your stuff. You can make it so that it lives out in the cloud somewhere. So, for example, I use NPass and I use Google Drive as the place it stores my stuff. So any machine, including my tablets and my phone and every laptop and desktop and everything.
You can point it up.
I can. I can make it connect, and any password I save in any one of those devices is then available to every device, and it's great. And then you only have to ever really remember one password, and that's the password to NPass or LastPass. Nope.
And Apple users have a password manager built in to their devices called Keychain. And you're already using it, even if you probably don't realize it. When the box pops up and says, would you like me to remember this password? It goes into the keychain.
Right.
And you can open your keychain utility in the utilities folder and look up your old passwords.
Chrome does that. Linux does that.
Yep.
Firefox does that. So yeah, they're all pretty much capable of doing all of that stuff. And that'll
one of the dangers of using it.
All right there.
Yeah. One of the dangers of using a web-based
password manager.
Not web-based, but built into your browser password manager.
Oh yeah, yeah.
If someone gets your Chrome account or your Google account password, they now have all your other passwords too, because it's synced to your Google account or your Firefox account. So that's one reason to have a separate password manager outside of your browser.
Right, and use that one instead of the one that's built into the browser itself. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Those are the kind of things that you really seriously need to think about. If you're not using a password manager, you should be. If you are using a password manager, use it correctly and make sure that it's an external password manager. That's probably better than anything else. And like I said, one of the beauties of all of that is that it will run, in fact, on everything. So you don't have to have a different one for, you know, your phone. Or, oh, I have that password, but it's not in my phone. All my passwords are everywhere.
Same with me. And matter of fact, I just did up this last month an article in the Rah-Rah telling folks about password managers. Because, I'm sorry, there are so many folks out there that, you know, we walk into all the time that sit there and say, well, it's too hard to remember all those different passwords.
Yeah.
I can't remember all of them. Well, with NPass, you just remember one. Remember one password. The rest you can put in there, and they can be as complicated or as simple as you want, and nobody's going to break into them.
And right. A lot of people say, I don't have anything people would want to steal, because so they use the same password everywhere. Well, you have an identity.
Yep.
And they steal your identity and use it to attack other people, or they use it to send out an email in your name. So your friends now think you are stuck in an airport and need money for a ticket home. And yeah, you don't have to have a high credit line. You don't have to have a high bank account. You have an identity that people can steal.
My students used to say, I don't have anything. I say, you have an absolutely pristine line of credit.
Yep. Yep.
There is nothing worth more than that. Absolutely nothing. All right. Now that music tells me you've wasted an hour of your life with us here and the nonsense that we spew. But the good news, or the bad news, depending on your point of view, is we're not done yet. We're only halfway through this nonsense. There will be an entire another hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way in just a few minutes. We're all going to take a quick bio break, slightly longer break than we normally take, but we'll be back with a whole lot more of Dave Enright, way too much of Steve Ray, and almost enough of Nick Francesco, and all of you here on the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that with your generous support, we have managed to remain member-supported Jazz 90.1. It is the top of the hour, and we will be back in just a few minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966 Jazz. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we are member-supported, Jazz 90.1. Give us a call, 585-9. Do it early. Don't wait until 5 of.
Yeah.
585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Or text us at 585-205-8887. But if you're going to text us, give us a decent amount of information. We're going to go back to the phones. Our next caller is Gary from Rochester, New York. Hi, Gary. What's up?
Hi. I just developed a problem. My wife was using the computer overnight, and now our wireless mouse isn't working well. I can tell you what I've tried, the obvious things. It's a Logitech wireless mouse that worked fine yesterday, and the main issue is that the pointer won't move on the screen when I move it. If I use I have a Lenovo ThinkPad, and of course I can move the cursor around on the screen using that, and once I find what I want to find, I can left click on the Logitech wireless mouse, and it works. But when I move, I think I've already said it, is she changed the batteries. They work. It's certainly on and working partially. Is it just shot and I need to replace it?
Well, the first thing I would do is try rebooting your machine.
Okay.
In case.
Just in case, yeah. Does it have a little RF dongle that's plugged into the computer, or is it Bluetooth?
It's a little RF dongle that's plugged into the computer. And
try a different USB port.
Yes. Oh, just try a different one?
Yeah, just unplug it from the one it's in and plug it into a different USB port.
Okay.
And see what happens. That's kind of the same as rebooting it, actually.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah. Well, rebooting it would be the easier thing to try. And what would be the next step that you can
do? The next step would be a new mouse.
Try that mouse on a different computer.
Right, to make sure it's the mouse.
He's got fresh batteries in it?
Yeah, right. He said he did.
Okay.
And they're in the right direction?
Yeah.
And you took the little plastic tab off?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
We've had customers like, it doesn't work. Did you take the plastic? Well, plastic tab. The little plastic tab that prevents the battery from making power contact?
Yeah. Well, I did pass the third grade.
So, yeah, excellent. Yeah.
So I can do a series circuit. Well, thank you very much.
Good luck, Gary. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, we do find some people are surprised that wireless mice and keyboards have batteries in them.
Yep.
Which is why they have an on-off switch.
Yep. That hardly anyone ever notices and never turns it off, so the batteries die too quick.
Right. This is one of the reasons I prefer wired.
A lot of the new Apple mice have a built-in rechargeable battery, which is handy, but you can't use the mouse while you're charging it because the charging port's on the bottom. But they say, okay. Yeah, it's Apple. 10 minutes charge gives you a couple hours use to finish out what you were doing. But one of their older mice that had the AA batteries in it, what was weird, you know how almost every electric device, the batteries are opposite directions.
Sure.
In the Apple mouse, they were the same direction because they weren't in series. They were in parallel. So you got twice the battery life. It only needed 1.5 volts, but by putting two batteries in, you got twice the life.
Right. Okay.
But then you had to remember to put them in the same way because every other device you use are...
We got another text in here. It says, Scotty from Fairport listening to the show. Tell Nick thanks for getting back to me via email on my handyman website.
Right.
Just thank you very much, and great reminder about password manager.
Thanks. Yeah, Scotty is looking for somebody to take over his website, and I've sent several people the information, and none of them got back to him. So I'll do some more nudging later today.
Well,
people are busy.
Yeah,
I get it. But this guy needs help, and
well, even though you know,
a few bucks.
Some folks maybe aren't going into work. Sometimes it's even more now with kids. If they have kids at home, if they're doing the schooling and everything else at home, now all of a sudden the few chores that you had now have multiplied because you've got that much more to do you know, than just running off to the office and forgetting everything. It's there, and you're, you know, got to help out with the more. So it's a lot more stress. And
yeah, a lot of parents are beginning to understand just how valuable teachers are.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, there used to be a sort of a connotation about homeschoolers that didn't learn. They didn't learn very much because, you know, you're just teaching from home, right? Well, now everyone's realizing what a tough job that is.
It's a very tough job.
And you're untrained. Think of all the training your teacher had to go through.
And many teachers have semi-specialized subjects.
Yeah.
I teach math.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you're teaching math and history and science and everything.
Did you see the new technology that they're spinning out to a number of the schools? It's called the OWL. And what it is they set up this device in the middle of the classroom. So the teacher could be at the classroom. And like they said, nothing worse than kids trying to do online training, staring at a screen. Okay, you're going to lose them.
It's this 360-degree webcam, basically.
Yeah, and it's a webcam, and it follows the teacher around. So the teacher can sit there and be, you know, have props in their hand and everything else, and they see the whole school. And if a child starts talking, it brings them into it.
And the glowing eyes make it look like an owl face, and as it turns around and runs its head backward, it looks like an owl. Owllabs.com. That's kind of neat.
Owl Labs?
Yes. Two L's in a row. So, the Facebook? Facebook had the portal that looked like it followed you.
Yeah.
It didn't really. It had a HD camera and only showed an SD part of it. But as you walked across the field, it could follow you on that HD view because it didn't actually have a motor in it to turn the camera to follow you walking.
Right. I think they're using
this one. Must have a motor in it.
They're in Oregon, and evidently a number of schools have been trying it out, and it works great.
They're $1,000.
But it's keeping the interest of the kids. That's the key. You know, it's well worth $1,000, you know, if the kids are actually going to participate and feel like they're in a classroom, not just staring at a teacher's face. They see the whole room, and it literally follows them around 360 degrees. So I guess they're going to be pushing that quite a bit.
I've talked to a number of teachers over the last few months, and many of them are saying it is much more exhausting to teach distance than it is to teach. And I used to teach distance. I once had a class, and I'm at the college level, so it's both easier and harder. I once had a class that had somebody in every time zone that had land in it.
Mm.
Every single one. And it meant that there were people up at 3 in the morning or 5. Because I'm up at 3 in the morning, 5 in the morning. I didn't sleep back in those days. So it wasn't as big a deal as it could have been. But if, you know, for people who want to give their students the proper amount of instruction and treat them all equally, you really have to be up 24/7.
Yep.
Anyway, back to the phones. Our next caller is Kevin from Greece, New York. Hi, Kevin. What's up?
Hi. I think I might have a virus problem on my desktop. I started poking around a little bit because of what I heard said about the new upgrade for Windows 10, that the new upgrade will stop supporting 32-bit programs. I went to look, and in the process, I was using Revo Uninstaller to delete some things that I didn't really need anymore. Revo actually has a column on it that shows you what's a 32-bit thing.
Oh, neat.
I looked at something called AS Media Hub, USB Hub Controller Driver, and I'm like, well, that's 32-bit. I might need to upgrade that. If you right-click in Revo, it offers to open the help file or the connect update file within that program. As soon as I did that, Firefox and AVG both, like, jumped all over it and said, there's a virus here. Like, they just froze it. It froze up my system so bad that the power button wouldn't even work. I had to shut it off from the surge protector.
That's odd, because the AS Media Hub is the audio board drivers for Asus motherboards.
Okay. Well, this is not an Asus machine. This is a
bought at a local shop and, you know, put together a desktop.
Well, they may have put an Asus motherboard in it.
It may have an Asus motherboard in it.
Yeah, okay. All right. At any rate, I then, you know, went through and I'm doing the security tango, and it found a few things here and there, but during one of the things that the security tango says is to do a rootkit. So I did one of the ones you've got on there, something called GMER, which I think is an Avast product. During that, it crashed Windows right in the middle of running that rootkit finder. All of a sudden, Windows says, oh, there's been an error. We need to reboot. And a big blue screen comes up, and it reboots. So I'm wondering if that's really something like the rootkit finder is, you know, finding something and it's just crashing, or is this just Windows being...
Well, that is one of the symptoms of that, yes. Yes.
Okay.
So at this point, what needs to be done, and bear with me.
Yeah.
What needs to be done is that hard drive needs to be pulled.
Right.
And checked on a different machine. Now, if you don't have the stuff to do that with, then you're going to need to take it to a dealer.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, that's kind of where I thought it was going with this, because, you know, the rest of the security tango ran fine, and you do say somewhere, run it again. So I ran it again this morning, and boom, same problem right there.
Yeah.
So there's something deeply embedded somewhere, and it's going to take putting it on a bench and not having it be the boot disk.
Right. You need to boot from a known clean disk that has the anti-rootkit on it. Now, a lot of those rootkit programs will have some sort of a USB thumb drive that you can download and install. So you boot from that thumb drive, and then it scans the drive in the computer.
Right, but at this point, it's like professional help is probably advised. So I will talk to the shop that I bought it from and take it into them on Monday when they open, and I think that's what I'll do.
Yeah, it's probably your best bet at this point.
Yeah, okay. Interesting, though, that business about 64-bit and 32-bit programs, I'm looking at the list, and the version of Google Chrome I've got on this desktop says it's a 32-bit. So that's very strange. I mean, shouldn't Chrome have updated itself to a 64-bit version?
Or? Well, no, if you install a 32-bit version, it assumes you want a 32-bit version and won't change that.
Okay. So that would be something that either the shop or I should be looking at. It's like, get the 64-bit version in there, because eventually Windows 10, I won't be able to avoid this upgrade. I can you know, refuse to do it for a while, but it's going to kill me after a while here.
Yeah, exactly right. And you should in general, you should not install 32-bit programs on any 64-bit system.
Oh, sure.
But at this point, at the very least, replace them. And there are ways to do that without losing your bookmarks and et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
So, you know, be aware that it's not just a matter of wipe it and put it back.
Yeah.
So, and that's true for your mail and for everything else. So if you're using, for example, Thunderbird, we talked about that last week.
Right.
Make sure it's the 64-bit version, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So tell your dealer that that's something. Now, obviously, they'll charge you for that if you're going to have them do it. But and that's fair. So tell them that they should check for 32-bit programs and replace them with 64-bit versions.
Right.
Certainly the free stuff.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. All right. Good. Yeah. The you've talked about Thunderbird and using online mail programs a couple of weeks in a row now. And my experience many years ago was I could not get Thunderbird to work on whichever desktop I had at the time. And the Frontier people finally told me, just do it online.
Right.
And, in fact, that has been better, because now I can access my Yahoo Frontier mail on my phone. And the other thing is, Thunderbird always tried to download everything first and then put the spam in the spam folder. Using the Yahoo online and keeping it all up on their servers, all the spam stays in the spam folder on their server, and I'm not wasting bandwidth downloading it here and putting it in the spam folder.
Perfect.
So I found that it's a really good solution.
Yep. That wasn't the Thunderbird problem. That was a Frontier problem.
Yeah, right. But still.
Frontier only supports POP. And so POP always downloads all your mail.
Yeah.
Works for Android and Apple and everything. If you tell your phone it's a Yahoo account, then it will use IMAP.
Well, you can tell it to use IMAP.
Right. Yeah. Right. I think it defaults to IMAP, but
probably.
Yeah. You can tell it to use IMAP with everything stays on the server. Yeah. The danger there, and we had a customer come in this week and got really mad at us. She was using Google Mail on the web, and she deleted something she didn't want to delete and wanted us to bring it back for her.
And you can't.
And you can't because it's on the web. If right. she would have been using a mail program, so it downloaded the mail to her computer. So even with IMAP, it will sync it to your computer. So you have a local copy on your computer, and then she would have a copy on her backup drive.
Oh, okay.
We could have got it back.
Right.
But since she was using the web and deleted it, it's gone. And the only choice is to find somehow to contact Google to see if they have a backup, and that probably won't happen.
Well, they probably do. I don't think Google ever erases anything.
Yeah.
Right.
Google actually makes it hard to delete your mail. You have to jump through hoops to right. delete it forever and say, yes, delete forever.
But this leads me to remind people that when they do backups, backup your mail.
Yeah.
So make that sure you could go folder. To yesterday's backup and retrieve that that mail.
Right.
But a lot of people don't because they say, well, Google's doing it.
Yeah.
Well, yes and no.
They may be doing it, but you're not going to get the restore back.
Right. You won't lose mail, but you can't retrieve accidentally erased mail. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
It's gone. Okay. All right. Well, thanks.
Thank you.
To the shop on Monday. All right.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Thanks, Kevin. Bye bye. Yeah. The problem with rootkits in general is that they truly are insidious, and you really do need to have. I talk about how to at least detect them in the security tangle, but you may not be able to get rid of them because the whole idea of a rootkit is it runs before anything else takes over and protects itself.
Yep.
And so you need to put it in an external machine in order to properly remove it from your system. But as Kevin found out, you can detect it at least, sometimes by brute force, but you can detect it and at least know it's in there.
We had one other text come in here. It's Carl from, or Mark rather, I'm sorry. Mark from Greece. I have two wireless mice that stopped working on my Windows machine, but they work fine on my Chromebook.
That's probably a driver issue. Uninstall and reinstall the drivers on
yeah,
the Windows machine.
That's what I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you know the mouse physically works, so or it's the USB port that he had the dongle plugged into.
Could be,
right? One of the issues that we're going to be running into with this whole transfer from 32-bit to only 64-bit is if you're running 32-bit drivers,
yep.
those devices are going to stop working,
and you may not know what's a 32-bit driver.
Right. So if you have an older device, it most likely has a 32-bit driver.
Yep.
If they have a 64-bit driver, you win. If they do not, that device will stop working. It really is that simple.
Yep.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is our friend Carl from Pottstown, PA. What's up, Carl?
Hey, guys. I have a quick question. I have a Windows 10 desktop machine, and I have an Adobe Acrobat Reader, the free version, and I have a few Adobe Acrobat text documents on my hard drive. And I was wondering if there is anything either built into Windows or built into the Adobe Reader that would allow me to do a text-to-speech conversion so I could listen to these documents read to me instead of reading them on the screen.
There are a lot of third-party programs for text-to-speech. Visually impaired community has them.
Adobe.
There should be something in Windows 10, the text-to-speech languages.
Adobe Reader does have under setup assist under edit accessibility setup assistant. It does have a read out loud, which is text-to-speech.
Oh, that's interesting. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, so it's in.
You may have to turn it on in the preferences.
Right,
first.
Right. Once you turn it on, it should be under the view menu.
Okay, I was wondering because you know it's updated every once in a while. I thought maybe they may have thrown that in somewhere along the line.
Now it is right. It is robotic sounding.
Yes, but
there was a huge mess in the ebook world where ebook readers had a text to speech option, and the Authors Guild sued them.
Right.
Because they want you to buy the Audible version instead. And so I remember Will Wheaton talked about it on one of his blogs because he narrates some audiobooks. Having the robot read the text to you is nothing like having an actual actor perform the reading. It is so much better. But some people just don't care. I want it to read to me. I don't want to buy a new version.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'll check that out. I will see if it does it. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye bye.
Yep.
In the latest macOS, they changed the speech synthesis underneath, so they added the phonemes better, so that it sounds a lot more natural than previous OSs. Doesn't sound as much like a robot anymore. And Google did the same thing with their Google. Oh, what's the
assistant?
No, it's not. It's the one that makes phone calls for you. That they called a restaurant to make a reservation.
Yeah,
it's not Duo or.
Yeah, it's Duo. Is it Duo?
They have so many products with so many similar names. Yeah. So a better voice assistants to sound more like people.
Right.
But then I read stories about people who answer the phone and the person at the other end of the phone is mad that it's a robot. I assure you, sir, I'm not a robot. Oh, only a robot would say that and hang up angrily.
You know what? Sometimes Bruce Campbell once said something about people who think movies are real.
Yeah.
You can't help them. You can only torture them.
Yep.
I'm paraphrasing, but yeah.
I read a story about someone went to a Titanic exhibit in Halifax. Because that's where a lot of the survivors came, and they have a big thing. And one part of the story, they asked if that was the real iceberg, because they have a big sheet of ice that you can see is that the real iceberg that sucked the Titanic, and where is Leonardo DiCaprio buried?
Yeah,
because he died in the movie.
Right, right.
Oh, I'm sorry, that was a spoiler.
Spoiler.
You gave away that it sank, so there goes the whole movie.
Well, after 108 years, that shouldn't be a spoiler
now. Right. And how many people have busted the myth that there wasn't room for them on the door?
Yeah. Well, and Mythbusters did an episode on that and showed that there was room for them on the door. And Jim Cameron was part of that episode, and he admitted, yes, there was enough room for him, but it wasn't in the script.
Right.
Sorry.
That's exactly right. But Adobe Reader, there is also Foxit and a number of other products that you can use to read Adobe products. But
Apple has a built-in PDF reader called Preview. It does PDFs, it does graphics, it does video, it does all sorts of things. But people are constantly downloading the Adobe Reader because the website says they have to.
Right.
That's only because Adobe paid them to put that up there.
Right.
No, you don't need the Adobe Reader. You need a PDF reader, which you already have.
Right.
Because, well, the Adobe readers had a lot of problems.
They, for the longest time, had terrible... Are we playing music in the background? Is that what's happening? All right, back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. We'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm trying to figure that one out. Why didn't he play the polka music with Ray announcing his show?
He played polka music for somebody else at the beginning. Yeah. So, yeah.
It's a mix and match kind of day.
It's a mix and match kind of day, and you're listening to Sound Bites. Before we get back to the phones, we do have a text message. The person said they don't think Microsoft is going to stop supporting 32-bit. That's actually kind of true. And Steve has the dates. Nope, he doesn't have the dates.
No, I'll bring them back up.
Okay.
As of May 2020, with the 2004 update, Microsoft Windows will not run 32-bit apps.
Right.
They're removing 32-bit. So if you buy a new computer now that has the current OS on it, it won't run 32-bit software. And support for 32-bit software in version 1909 ends next May 2021. So don't upgrade if you have 32-bit software.
Right.
Because it will stop running and they'll stop supporting it.
Right. And so, yes, if you continue to run the Windows you have now, you can continue to run 32-bit software. But as we've been saying from the beginning, if you have a mix of 64 and 32-bit software, you're doing yourself a disservice. You are running your system much slower than it could be running.
Fortunately, they've gotten so pretty fast, you don't realize that.
Right.
Until you compare it to a full 64-bit system.
Right, right. So, yeah, and so, yes, it will. Microsoft themselves says that they will stop supporting. They're saying Windows 10 will be fully 64-bit, and Microsoft will no longer release 32-bit builds.
Yeah.
And will stop supporting 32-bit in the future.
Well, it always stands to reason. Most of the systems out there are all 64-bit,
yep.
And they can only support old technology so long because that cost.
One of the biggest limitations of the 32-bit Windows was the 4 gig memory.
Right.
Actually, 3.7.
3.7 gig.
Because Windows needs a little bit of that 4.
Right.
And so you started getting 8 gig computers. It had to be 64.
Right. Or you waste all that extra RAM. You can make a nice 4-gig RAM drive, though.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hi, Tom. What's up?
Hi. Good afternoon. So I guess I don't have to watch the Titanic movie. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh. Yeah, sorry.
You told me.
Spoiler alert.
That's okay. How long has that been out? About 10 years now, isn't it?
Easy.
20, I guess.
I missed it.
30 years? Sorry, go ahead.
25, yeah.
I got a frantic call from my son this morning. He has a MacBook Air, and he says when he turns it on, it turns on for a few minutes, and then he gets what he calls the circle of death, and then after a few more minutes, the screen goes black. So I'm probably going to have to take it in for repair. Can you give me any insight as to what might be going on?
It's probably giving an error message and then shutting down. If you hold down Command and V for verbose, you get all the boot logs, and you can see the boot messages coming up.
He says he sees a folder come up just before it turns black.
That probably the flashing folder means it can't find a boot drive.
Flashing folder, that's what he said. Yeah,
so it can't find a bootable drive. And if you hold on the Command V, you may see an error message go by about the drive can't be repaired or drive can't be found or something like that. So it could be the drive is failing.
Okay.
If you hold down Command R, that will take you into the recovery volume, and you can run the disk utility and see if it can find and repair the disk that's there. But it's probably the disk failing.
In which case, we all hope he's got a good backup.
Yeah.
We've been doing backup using iDrive for a few months now. So
you should be fine then, theoretically.
Yeah.
And the older MacBook Airs do have a solid-state flash drive. They're not SATA drives. They're PCI Express. So and every couple generations, they change the connector. To make it gives a wider connection, so they're faster and faster.
Yeah.
But you can replace the drives in the MacBook Air. It's one of the few things you can replace. You can't replace the RAM or the CPU, but you can replace the drive. Not
it's
anymore, though.
Years.
More and more things are getting soldered.
Yeah, I've got a MacBook Air that the drive is fine. It's the RAM that's bad. So.
Yeah.
Right. As I said, it's about 4 years old.
Yeah. Right. Right. Right.
Okay, can the user put this drive in themselves?
If you're handy with tinkering inside computers,
You can.
Would we recommend it?
No.
Okay.
It's not that hard on the Air, but it's not something you want to do if you've never really
Yeah, you don't want to short something out,
torn
or
something apart,
mess something else out,
and put it back together right,
or get hit by a
taking them apart is actually pretty easy.
Yep,
putting them together is very hard.
And you always have that bucket of leftover screws.
Yep,
you can always use screws, right?
Right.
Yeah.
All right, we'll probably take it in then.
Probably yep. Your best bet. Sorry.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks. Bye bye.
Yeah, and then on the new iMacs, Apple just announced the iMac desktop. They used to have the Fusion drives, which were part SSD for speed and part spinning drive for capacity.
Right.
Because big SSDs are expensive.
Right.
The new iMacs are SSD only. Everyone is loving that. But now they start at 256 gigs of storage.
Right.
Which is really small.
Right.
And so if you want to upgrade to more storage, it's almost... for a Mac, it's annoyingly expensive. It's already a little expensive, and you can't. So the $1,799 model, you can't upgrade the SSD. You have to go to the $1,999 model before you can upgrade the SSD.
Okay,
so
well, there you are.
Yeah, but that it's a 27-inch 5K display. It's got an 8-core processor in it. They have a 10-core option now, so they're really pushing the high end. At the high end of the market, but it's just very frustrating. We went through that in laptops for the last few years. We had terabyte spinning drives in laptops, and then they went to 128 gig SSD. Everyone loved the fast, but everyone hated the small.
Right.
And that's where the Fusion drive was the nice compromise.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Bill. What's up?
I have a couple questions for you. I missed the name of that password manager that you mentioned earlier?
There are two. The one we like is called Enpass, E-N-P-A-S-S.
Okay, thank you. So I have a Avast on my computer. It's a Dell, about a year and a half old. And at the bottom right hand of the screen, I get these really annoying pop-ups. How do I deal with those?
Are they... advertisements, or are they what?
Yes.
What's popping up?
Yeah, the ads, and sometimes these, like they look a little bit like a newspaper article, but they're really an ad.
That's a feature of Windows 10.
Yeah, it does. It has nothing to do with Avast.
Yeah.
Okay.
There is a way to turn that ad feature off, and we're frantically.
That's
Googling
called
for
it. The Windows 10 taskbar pop-up notifications. And it's in the Settings app.
Okay.
So once you open up Settings, yep. Scroll down on the left, you'll see, you might have to scroll down, depends on how big your screen is, to Notifications yep. and Actions.
Okay.
And one of those choices, the bottom choice, I believe, is Get Tips, Tricks, and Suggestions as You Use Windows. What they mean by Tips, Tricks, and Suggestions is ads.
They just don't use yeah. Clippy anymore.
Right.
Remember yeah. Clippy?
Wow. Okay. Okay, I'll do that. So also I have Avast, and they suggest using a VPN. I have no idea why they would and what advantage there would be to using it.
Because they sell one.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, okay.
And they make money off that.
Virtual private network is a thing that helps keep you semi-anonymous on the internet. And all those weasel words tell you that they're not as effective as they would like to pretend they are.
So right now, your internet service provider knows every web page you go to because they're sending you there.
Sure.
You put a VPN on, and that VPN has an endpoint in some other city. So
or
now,
country.
Or country. So now your internet provider doesn't know where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
Except that endpoint, which will be a well-known VPN server.
Does know where you're going.
Which does know where you're going.
Right. Yeah. Some browsers, like Opera, has a built-in VPN.
Yeah.
So every time I open Opera, I'm in Russia.
Yeah.
The couple of most useful things for a VPN were for businesses. That's where they actually came out. It's a virtual private network. So when I'm at home, I can log in, or I'm at a client site usually, I can log into my VPN at the office, and it's as if I am in the office, and I can access my servers, I can access my printers, because I'm virtually in the office.
That's what a VPN is. And because it's his VPN, he really is protected.
Right.
With the commercial VPN services, another big use for it is like coffee shops. So you go to a coffee shop to get on the internet. Everyone else in that coffee shop can potentially see where you're going because you're all on the same network.
There's a program called Wireshark that lets you sniff the network.
Yeah.
And capture the data, and it won't capture VPNs.
More and more stuff on the internet is being encrypted now, but a lot of it isn't.
Right.
And so
right.
people can see not just where you're going, they can see the contents of what you receive and what you send.
Right.
So it sounds like if you're on any sort of a public network,
you should use a VPN.
Using your VPN.
Right.
But from home, not so much.
Right.
Yeah.
And, but then the problem is you have to use a VPN you trust because they know everything now because that's where your traffic is going.
Yeah.
So you should roll your own.
Right.
But that's not very useful for average home users.
Right.
Right, right. Definitely not. Okay, well, thank you so much for your help.
Sure. Years ago, I was teaching a class on security, and this was when VoIP programs were just becoming popular.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to prove my, I was telling my students that they're not secure, and of course the students are like, no,
yeah,
they're real secure.
What do you know?
So I went over to the student union, and I had a program called VOMIT, Voice Over Misconfigured Internet Telephones. And I recorded about 2 hours worth of stuff. And I just sat and recorded it while I was, you know, surfing the net and reading and stuff on my laptop. And then I went back to my office to look through them before class. Thank God I did. There wasn't a single one of them I could legally air in a public classroom. Lot of phone sex. Lot of phone sex.
Wow.
Lot of phone sex. I took notes, but it was...
And then your wife thinks you're seeing someone else, because where did you learn that?
Also, where did you get these recordings?
Yeah.
But yeah, so voice over IP, again, if you're not using a VoIP, anyone can sniff that out. And for anything that you do, banking theoretically is secure, because you're they'll know you went to your bank, but they won't be able to read any of the information.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to hide even where you're going, a VPN is a better option. But then you do have to trust.
Yep.
It's the old game. Who do you trust?
Yep.
You know, and if you don't know who the other end is, just because they say they're somebody wonderful, you don't know that for sure.
Yeah, and the way they can sit there and, you know, the people clicking, well, it looked official.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Well, you give me, say, a half hour or so, and I can probably create a, you know, your bank's website looking very official. Because all I got to do is go to their website, copy their logos and everything else, and make it look as fit, as official as any bank here in the city, and tell you, yeah, you know, we need to get your password and everything else because it's been hacked. And folks say, well, yeah, but it had the logos and everything else, but they don't pay attention to the actual the address that they're going to.
Right.
A lookalike address. The other issue is that there's a lot of free VPN services, which are nice because they're free, but they have to be making their money somehow.
And you're getting for what you pay there.
Right. It's usually by selling data about where you web surf.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there's a couple of I hear a lot of ads on the podcast I listen to for ExpressVPN, and they say that they don't keep any logs. So the police can't confiscate logs. And one of the things that they do is all of their servers are running in RAM. So you turn the power off, Everything's gone.
Who's this?
ExpressVPN.
Nice.
And they have taken third-party audits that have shown that this is how it works. So they say police have come and raided their closets and taken servers away, and they're empty.
Sure.
Because all the VPN stuff is running in RAM, which makes it really fast. That's the other problem with a VPN. It's often very slow. In fact, Leo Laporte on This Week in Tech joked once about he was on vacation somewhere and had his VPN set to Japan so he could watch some TV show he wanted and forgot it was still set to Japan when he came back to California. And so he was routing all his internet traffic over to Japan through the VPN and then back out to the internet. He was watching Netflix and watching YouTube, didn't realize it was still Japan until programs, you know, websites started coming up in Japanese because it thought that's where he was.
Right.
So it was so fast he didn't realize that it was there. So that's.
And ExpressVPN is only about $13 a month. If you buy it yearly, it's only $8.50 a month.
And I think Twit has a special for 15 months for the price of 12 or something like that.
Right.
So,
but it's not going to be free. It's not going to be cheap.
Yeah. But if you need that level of
security,
a little level of anonymity, that can help as well.
Oh, Scott, thank you very much. Scott just donated to the Soundbites to keep it alive, which is very nice of him. Yeah,
3 months. So expressvpn.com/twit. We should get a referral code. You get 3 months for the price of 12.
Yeah.
Now, what's interesting is there's a lot of websites that are advertising on podcasts. And so I listen to computer podcasts. I listen to RC podcasts. I listen to Rocket podcasts. And it's the same three or four companies that are advertising on a lot of these different podcasts. So you can tell those forward-thinking companies that, hey, there's a new audience for us.
Exactly. It's a very nice thing, but it either costs or I don't trust it.
Yeah.
To be honest. And, you know, whatever it was, $10 or $12 a month,
mm-hmm.
not a lot of money if you really need to be secure.
So if you are technically inclined, OpenVPN is a free VPN software you can run on your own server and set it up yourself and do it your own self.
I've got it on a list to put it on one of my servers, and it's often easier to
get a router that has a VPN server built into it.
Right.
So then when you're at the coffee shop, you VPN back to your house and do everything through that VPN.
Right. Right. So that's not bad either.
Yeah.
But I keep talking about setting it up and I keep not doing it. It just sits on my list.
Well, at least it's on a list.
It's on the list, and I think that's enough
It's just not a high priority.
Right, right, right.
I was able to check off make a list on my list.
Excellent.
That's one step in the right
direction. I have a to-do list that sits on the web, and it's really very nice, and when I uncheck something, it disappears and all the other yada yada. I can have multiple lists, and right now I've got so many lists with so much crap on them, I just don't even look at it anymore.
Yeah.
It's too bad. Just wipe it out and start all over.
Make a list to take care of all your other lists?
Yeah, exactly. Daily little things I put on post-it notes or just a piece of paper.
Yep.
But yeah, the thrill to be able to crumple it up.
Yep.
That one's done.
That one's done. The long-term stuff goes on the web list, and I never get to it. So, you know what? I don't need to. It's not a work-related thing. Those I take care of, and everything else just...
You're retired now.
Since I'm retired, doggone it. So we're good. It's all good for me.
That's why you got to go. You know, I mean, a little flexibility.
Yeah, flexibility.
And it's, you know what? It's not going to be the end of the world if it didn't get done. So, you know, you enjoy it somewhat. I mean, I'm semi-retired, and, you know, like you say, it's like, yeah, I got a few things that are on the refrigerator, you know. And
right.
Yeah. Not this week.
My priorities are what Elaine tells me to do, what I absolutely need to do, and naps.
My wife is retired and keeps reminding me that I have 10 years to go before I can retire.
All right, that music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. We really appreciate that many of you called in early. We really appreciate that. I want to thank everybody who voted in the poll this week. We haven't had quite that many people voting in a while, and you still can, of course. The poll will be open all week, particularly those of you who download the podcast. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. It's 6 minutes before the hour, and we will see you in just 166 of those hours. Be good to each other. See you next week.